What is going on, sports fans? Hope you had a great weekend. Welcome back into this Monday edition of The Glass Half Full, an ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. Lots to kind of look back to over the weekend real quick. Obviously, both the Dallas Mavericks and the Edmonton Oilers fought off getting swept. Oilers with a big, impressive 8-1 win over the Florida Panthers on Saturday. Of course, we'll talk about that coming up more on tomorrow's show as we get ready for that Game 5. But tonight, we have Game 5 in the NBA Finals. Dallas with an impressive performance on Friday night to fight off getting that sweep. And they're staying alive. I think when you look at this game from Friday night, I honestly, truthfully, I think Dallas just got tired of being pushed around and bullied because they came out and they played a lot more physically than they normally do, right? They were very physical on Friday night. And I think a big reason was that was they had nothing to lose, right? It wasn't a situation where it was a, series tied at two games apiece. No, they were down 3-0. They had to win that game or else they were done. And I think they came out and you've heard the phrase, throw everything at them but the kitchen sink. They might have actually thrown the kitchen sink at Boston on Friday night too. I think they did a great job of kind of knowing what they needed to do in this game and getting out there and executing it, right? And we've saw what happened if you put this Boston team on the ropes, right? If you're kind of punching this Boston team likes to punch you in the face. Not literally, of course, but they like to come out and they like to dictate the pace of the game. They want to dictate how that game goes from start to finish. And if you come out and you're throwing haymakers right back at them and you're not letting them do that and you're keeping it close, then you've got a great opportunity at beating this Boston Celtics team. This Celtics team has played 13 games this year that have been decided by four or fewer points. They are 6-7 in those games. You keep it close against Boston. You keep it 5 points or less against Boston, you're going to have a great opportunity to beat the Celtics. And I think that's what Dallas kind of tapped into a little bit on Friday night. They tapped into that, we have nothing to lose. Let's just go out there and let's throw haymakers right back at them. Let's fire off three-point shots. Let's drive down and be physical in the paint. And they did that, and it turned into a very successful night for them at home. Now, the problem is tonight they have to go back on the road to TD Garden and try to beat the Celtics in Boston. The Celtics are 37-4 in Boston throughout the season, including the postseason. That is not an easy place to go into and win if you are the visiting team. Can Dallas do it? Yeah, they have the talent to do it, but it is going to be tough for them, right? You've got to have a near-perfect night from Luka and Kyrie, and you've got to have those surrounding pieces around those two. That's your big two, but you've also got to have the surrounding pieces around them to step up and play better. So I think looking at this situation for Game 5 tonight, which, by the way, does get tipped off at 7:30. You can watch it on TV on ABC. You can also listen. Sean Kelly has the call on ESPN Pensacola right here, 99.1. You can turn in there and hear the ESPN radio broadcast of it right here. And, man, I don't know what to expect from this game tonight because I don't know what to expect from Dallas. That's going to See, I don't think Boston really played out of character or did anything crazy different Friday night. I think Dallas just hit them in the mouth early and did not let up. Like I said, they knew they had their backs against the wall. It was win or be done. If you wanted a chance at winning an NBA title, Dallas had to win on Friday night. So I don't think Boston really did anything out of character. I don't think they changed their game plan drastically. You can make the case that, yeah, maybe, some injuries kind of hurt them a little bit, Porzingis again, seemingly not, being healthy. But really, I think it was more so just what Dallas did than what Boston didn't do. So for Boston, I think you just come out and you play this game. You trust in a guy like Jason Tatum. You trust in a guy like Jaylen Brown, Drew Holiday, who's been fantastic. We'll talk more about him coming up in a second. He's been great for them so far in the NBA Finals. Just keep trusting those guys like you have so far all year throughout the postseason as well, and you'll be fine. For Dallas, you got to find whatever it was you had on Friday night. I know I like to make this reference of the Space Jam with Bugs Bunny having the Bugs special drink or whatever it was. Or no, it was Michael's special drink, where he just pretty much put water in a squeeze bottle, scribbled a label on it, and then handed it to the team. Everybody got a drink out of it, and they thought that they had like this special, you know, kind of like how the Monstars took the talent from the NBA players in that movie. They thought that they had a little bit of Michael Jordan's talent, so they started playing really well. But it was just a placebo effect, right? Dallas has got to find whatever drink it was they were having before Friday's game and have that again to have that same type of placebo effect for tonight's game. Because like I said, they got to have a darn near perfect night from Luka and Kyrie if they want the opportunity to force a game six. And here's the thing. We have never seen a team come back from being down 3-0 in the NBA Finals. We talked about it on Friday's show heading into game four. 156-0 is the record in NBA history. If a team has a 3-0 lead, chances are they go on to win the series. So this is a big game for Dallas. Not only because if they lose it, then Boston wins the NBA title. But if they win this game, if Dallas finds a way to win this game, they develop a little bit of momentum because that's a big road win. It's going to force a situation to where all the pressure is now switched over to Boston to win in game six, because I believe it's only been one other time during those 156 game stretches or series stretches where the team took a 3-0 lead that a team battled back and forced a game seven. And I think it was the Knicks that battled back and forced it. I think like in the 80s or 90s or something like that. So it's only really happened like once or twice that a team has been down 3-0 and battled back to fight for a game seven in an NBA final series. Again, not just any playoff series, but particularly an NBA final series. I don't think Boston wants that to happen, although Boston is always seemingly on the end of crazy sports things, right? So maybe we do see the first time that a team collapses after a 3-0 series leading an NBA finals and doesn't win it. But I think that's very, very unlikely. But again, for this game tonight, Dallas, if you win this game, suddenly you switch all the pressure off of you. And that pressure you were feeling Friday morning when you woke up, that Luka and Kyrie were, that little weight they had on their shoulder when they woke up Friday morning before game four, all of a sudden that pressure is now on Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. So this is a huge game for them, outside of the fact that obviously, yes, Boston can win the NBA championship tonight with a win. But if Dallas wins this game, that pressure flips over, and now all of a sudden we're talking about Boston collapsing. Can Boston finish the job? Is Boston in danger of being the first team in NBA history to lose an NBA Finals after starting off 3-0? And all of that pressure and all of that talk through newspaper, through social media, through radio, through television, that pressure is going to start to build on Boston. So it is a crucial game for the Dallas Mavericks tonight for more than one reason. But as we get closer into this series, because the series could very well end tonight, and if it does, thinking about who could be the series MVP, right? Who's that guy that's going to be the series MVP? And obviously, I think the obvious answer here, Jaylen Brown for the Celtics, right? He was the Eastern Conference Finals MVP, rightfully so, with the postseason he has had for the Celtics. He's really, especially with the injury to Porzingis, he's really kind of taken this team on his back and has really done a lot of great things. So no surprise he was the Eastern Conference Final MVP. Wouldn't really be a surprise if he's the NBA Finals MVP. But a couple of names to keep an eye on. I mentioned Jrue Holiday a while ago. Jrue Holiday is hitting just above 60% of his shots from inside the arc. From outside the arc, 44%. He has been very efficient for the Celtics throughout this NBA Finals series. So Jrue Holiday, a guy that is definitely going to be in the running and in contention. And I would dare say if I'm making a list of players from the Celtics that deserve to be the NBA Finals MVP, I'm putting Jrue Holiday above Jason Tatum. Because again, Jason Tatum hasn't been the guy, right? He hasn't been scoring a lot. he's more so been facilitating and let other guys do that, right? He's been the facilitator for this team in this series, and he said he's fine with that. He's like, I want to win an NBA championship, so if this team needs me to be the facilitator and not score a lot of points, not score 20, 30 points a night, if I have to be the guy that dishes it out and finds other open guys for us to win an NBA title, I'm happy doing that. And that's a great mentality to have, and I think that's one of the reasons why Boston is a game away from winning the NBA Finals. Because they all have that mentality on that roster. That's the mentality. That is the character and the discipline of this team right now, is that we will do whatever it is we have to do to be successful as a team to win an NBA championship. And they're one game from it because of guys like Jason Tatum. But again, I would put Jrue Holiday above Jason Tatum on this MVP conversation list. Obviously, Jaylen Brown is at that top spot, but with the way Jrue Holiday has just been, the way that he's just been efficient, and when they need a play, when they need a shot, he's that guy that's stepped up for them so far through this series. So definitely an option there. And then Luka for Dallas. Like, even if Dallas loses this series, man, Luka still deserves at least a piece of the MVP, because he has carried this Dallas Mavericks team. Right? Because it wasn't until game 3 and 4 of this series that we saw any kind of resemblance of Kyrie Irving being Kyrie Irving. He struggled big time the first couple of games. And he finally kind of found a rhythm and got it going a little bit in game 3. But Luka has been that guy this entire series. I mean, he's averaging like 30-something points per game in the NBA Finals alone. He's carried this team on his back. So if anybody from Dallas is going to get the conversation of MVP, it's definitely got to be Luka, for sure. Let's keep it on the hardwood court for a little WNBA talk, because, again, more in the saga of Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. Yesterday, Angel Reese gets called for a flagrant foul after she made contact with Caitlin Clark. I saw a video of it. I don't think it was a flagrant foul. I don't think she's intentionally trying to hit Caitlin Clark. I think she's going after the ball, and you have her arm moving in one direction, Caitlin's head is moving in the other, and they just make contact with each other there at center point. Had it been Angel Reese's hand that came across Caitlin's face, then yeah, sure. But you can clearly see Angel Reese has her arm extended trying to swat at the ball, and then Caitlin's face comes into the elbow area of her arm. They're both moving in opposite directions that are their momentum's carrying each other into one another. So anybody that's on social media going, oh yeah, she hit her in the face. She hit her in the face because she's jealous. There may be some jealousy there, but this is not an intentional swing at Caitlin Clark in the game. I would even go as far as to say it probably doesn't even deserve to be a flagrant foul. I know Angel Reese was kind of upset about it, and rightfully so, because I think at this point now we're just trying to maybe give a little extra protection to Caitlin Clark, especially after what happened the last time these two teams played a couple of weeks ago, where there was the clear and obvious cheap shot taken on Caitlin Clark. I think now anytime you come near Caitlin Clark, it's going to be some type of flagrant or anything like that. So you just got to be careful. But again, I saw the video. I don't think Angel Reese was going to try to hit Caitlin Clark. I think Angel Reese was trying to make a basketball play. And that's what she said. She's like, it was a basketball play. That's all it was. And I agree with that. I think she was just trying to make a play for her team. And it's something that happens in every pickup league across America. It's something that happens in the NBA. It's something that happens in college, in NCAA tournament or the regular season for men's basketball. It happens on the women's side as well. It's nothing crazy. It's nothing egregious. Angel Reese was just trying. It's kind of like when you go to try to block a guy who's taking a jump shot and you get a little too close to him and he's coming down and he comes down on like your toe or something like that and he rolls an ankle. You're not trying to make him roll an ankle, right? You're trying to make a basketball play, and just unfortunately the way it played out, you know, your bodies collide in a way that it causes a little bit of an injury. I think this was the same case. Caitlin Clark seems to be fine because of it. I don't think there was any kind of malice or ill intent here, even though some people probably on social media would say that there definitely was. I don't see it. I don't think there was. How about some football? Some spring football, the UFL. The was it Is it United Football League, Ultimate Football League? I don't know. It's the UFL, but we do know that. And its championship was yesterday. Just in case you didn't know, maybe you're not keeping up with spring football. That's okay. There's a lot of people that are like, I just can't do football in the spring. It's a fall sport. It's a fall and winter sport for me. I can't seem to bring myself to watch it in the middle of June. That's okay. I get it. But congratulations to the Birmingham Stallions. Won their third straight UFL championship yesterday. They beat the San Antonio Brahmas by 25 to nothing. Final score in that game. Not much of a championship game if that is your final score. But how about this? Shout out to Skip Holtz, right? Son of Lou Holtz. Absolutely killing it with the Stallions. He was kind of a journeyman in college football, going from job to job. Couldn't really find a place that was necessarily a sticking point for him. But he seems to have found a rhythm in the UFL. I don't know what it is with coaching in Birmingham in the UFL, but Skip Holtz doing some big things. As a matter of fact, this Birmingham Stallions team, led by him, has now joined the likes of the Green Bay Packers and the Edmonton Elks from the Canadian Football League to be the only football clubs to win three straight championships. Obviously, the Packers did it in 65 through 67, so 65, 66, and 67. The Elk in the Canadian Football League did it in 78, and 78, 79, 80, 81, 82. They went multiple years there. So congratulations once again to the Birmingham Stallions. I've not been to a Stallion game, but I've definitely seen the stadium they play in there in Birmingham. They share that new stadium with UAB in kind of downtown adjacent to Birmingham. And it is a gorgeous venue to watch a football game. So if you maybe next spring rolls around, the UFL gets kicked off, you want a place to go enjoy some good food and watch a good football game at a good venue, so go check out Birmingham Stallions. They seem to be doing it big and doing it right there in the UFL. Three straight league championships. They'll be looking to make it a fourth next year. And I would assume Skip Holtz would be back, right? I mean, you got to think that organization loves him as the head coach right now. And City of Birmingham probably loves him too, because City of Birmingham, that's a proud town. That's a proud city when it comes to football. We're not just talking about, like, you know, UAB either, but let's not forget Birmingham used to be the neutral site for the Iron Bowl, right? Alabama and Auburn used to play the Iron Bowl right there at Old Legion Field, which is, by the way, still there and still operating in Birmingham as well. They've kind of downgraded it a little bit, so it's a little smaller than it used to be, taking some seats away from it, but it's still very much there. And not just that, but I mean, high school level, right? I mean, Hoover, a 90s baby like me who remembers growing up with Two-A-Days on MTV, following the Hoover Buccaneers as they were winning state championships. They played Tim Tebow's niece team when Tebow was there. As a matter of fact, I think is that the game that Tebow had the broken leg and still played in? No, I don't think it was. But still. I mean, a very proud city when it comes to football. So I know they are loving what Skip Holtz is doing there with their UFL team and the Stallions. Stick with football, but move from the UFL to the NFL. We've got now our top odds for NFL teams that will win the Super Bowl in 2024. Not going to run through the whole league, but definitely want to take a look at some of these. San Francisco, Kansas City, they are sitting at the top of this. So it looks like lots of people are predicting and expecting there to be a repeat of a Super Bowl from last year in this upcoming season. Both of those teams, the Chiefs and the 49ers, sitting at plus 600 for a chance to win the Super Bowl. The Baltimore Ravens right behind them at plus 950. So I think, you know, as far as the Chiefs and the 49ers go, yeah, they're still going to be good this year. The Baltimore Ravens, you got Lamar Jackson. You've added some key pieces. You brought in Derrick Henry in your backfield. Are you kidding me? Yeah, Baltimore at number three, right behind those two teams. I definitely don't have a problem with them being that in that spot with, like I said, again, a plus 950 odd at winning the Super Bowl in 2024. The Detroit Lions behind them at plus 1,300. So, Detroit was a surprise team last year, And I think a lot of people loved that because it's nice to see a team like Detroit finally have some success. It's nice to see Ford Field packed and loud. Who knew before last season that Ford Field was that much of a home field advantage? That place can get loud, right? And honestly, up until last year, you wouldn't have known that unless you went to a concert there. That's about the only way you would have known that. But Detroit doing some big things there. Definitely looking forward to see if they take that next step in 2024. Behind them, you've got the Bengals at 1,400. Again, we talked about the Bengals last week with Joe Burrow. You got to keep Joey B healthy. If Joey B is not healthy, then you're going to struggle, right? Because, I mean, you look at his time in the NFL. He's played four seasons. He's played two of those seasons all the way through without an injury or a serious season-ending injury, I should say. And every time that he's played two full seasons, at least 11 games or more for the Bengals, they've gone to the AFC Championship game. Keep Joey B healthy. You're going to be just fine. T. Higgins, probably not going anywhere this season. He'll probably stick around and play. He'll probably be gone in free agency next year in 2025. But then you'll still have Ja'Marr Chase. You've got Ja'Marr Chase for two more years on his rookie deal. So you're still this year going to have T. Higgins. You're going to have Ja'Marr Chase. You're going to have other complementary weapons to help Joey B. You just got to keep him healthy. That's the big thing for the Bengals. I think they can be a team that is right there in the mix for the Super Bowl. The Philadelphia Eagles, again, we talked about how the Ravens added a great running back to help them out on offense. The Eagles did the same thing, adding Saquon Barkley. I definitely expect Saquon to be a big part of this offense for the Eagles moving forward into 2024. He's definitely going to be a guy that they use not only in the run game, but the passing game as well. I think he's going to be a very good underneath option for Jalen Hurts. If the play breaks down and he's got to roll out, then, you know, Saquon's going to be a guy that can kind of roll with him and he can dump it off to him. Or if it's a design play where you've got a couple of shots downfield, those shots aren't there, check it down, maybe be able to find something underneath with a guy like Saquon who can make a couple of guys miss, run over another guy, and before you know it, he's in the end zone celebrating a long touchdown play. So I definitely think the addition of Saquon Barkley, as well as a couple of other additions, really going to kind of put the Eagles back up where they were maybe a year or so ago. I know last year they kind of faltered down the stretch the last few weeks of the season, couldn't really get a rhythm going, didn't really play that impressively towards the end of the season. They weren't that impressive. I just said impressively. Is that even a word? It's not grammar class. Anyways, we won't worry about that. But we're talking about sports. It's not that serious. But it's still one of those things where I think the addition of the Eagles that they've added through the offseason this year, I think their particular plan was, how do we avoid collapsing like we did a season ago? And I think they did a great job of adding the players and the weapons that they need there to keep that from happening. The Buffalo Bills, look, when you have a guy like Josh Allen at the quarterback position for you, you're always going to be in Super Bowl contention. My problem with this is one of the younger, the youngest teams that Josh Allen has had to play with in his time at Buffalo. So how does that work? How do they transition into playing in the NFL? Keon Coleman coming in, he's expected to be a big weapon and a big target for Josh Allen. How does he transition from playing at the college level to now going into the NFL? There's definitely going to be some learning curves for them early on because they're just such a young team. So I think that is why they're a little bit further down on this list than what most Bills fans probably would expect. The Houston Texans behind them with a plus 1,600 chance at making the Super Bowl. And here's the thing with Houston. I have picked Houston to be my surprise team. We've talked about it multiple times here on the Glass Half Full, where I have really said, like, I really do think Houston is going to be this year's Detroit Lions. So like what we talked about with Detroit, about how it was great to see them finally kind of take that step and start having some success, start winning football games and being one of the top teams in the NFL. I think we're going to see that with Houston this year. I think when we look back at the 2024 season, I think Houston is going to be that team. You bring in Stephon Diggs. You've got C.J. Stroud as your quarterback. You add in a couple of other key pieces and key weapons. You're getting some nice, brand-new, fresh uniforms there in Houston for the season. I think it's going to be a big year for the Texans. I'm definitely looking forward to watching them play throughout the fall. Dallas Cowboys also at plus 1,600. Here's the thing with Dallas. It's the Cowboys. They're probably going to win the division somehow, some crazy way, just like last year with the Eagles kind of collapsing and them winning a couple of games late. They'll probably win 10 games, but then they'll get to the postseason and they'll forget how to play football. All right. I don't even know why we still put the Dallas Cowboys on any list like this, because they're just not, they're not a team that I don't put a lot of faith and a lot of weight in them when it comes to the postseason. I don't. I've seen it enough over the course of my lifetime. You know, those years of Troy Aikman and all those guys that actually could compete and win in the playoffs and eventually get to the Super Bowl. Those days are over. This Dallas Cowboys team, this Dallas Cowboys organization, for whatever reason, can't seem to remember how to play football once they hit the postseason. So Dallas sitting here at plus 1,600. It's a little laughable for me. The Green Bay Packers, the last team we're going to talk about on this list. The Packers are a team, they're continuing to build around Jordan Love. Kind of a rough, shaky start for them in the Jordan Love era, but they've slowly kind of pieced it together, right? And they had a strong finish to the season last year, building momentum for that organization and that team. They've added in some key players over the offseason, kind of addressed some of their needs. So, yeah, watch out for the Green Bay Packers. I think they're going to be a talented football team this year that is definitely for sure going to be a lot of fun to watch. This story right here, then our next story we're going to talk about, it's so just ridiculous. Because the Big 12 is considering selling naming rights for the conference. Yeah, you heard me right. The Big 12 is considering selling naming rights for the conference. Now, if that wasn't crazy enough, you would think, oh, okay, what are they going to do? The Big 12 brought to you by State Farm or State Farm Big 12 Conference? No, they want to drop big altogether. So you're going to have whatever corporation buys the sponsorship deal, and then the number 12. So it's going to be the Chick-fil-A 12 conference, not the Chick-fil-A Big 12 conference. At least from the article I read, that's what they're planning on doing, is dropping the word big and replacing it with whatever corporation decides to buy the naming rights for the company. So how we have, you know, these stadiums that are brought to you by, you know, these companies and these corporations or whatever, you know, SunTrust Park, Tropicana Field. We've got all of these different places like that, right? MetLife Stadium, Hard Rock Stadium, Mercedes-Benz Superdome, Nissan Stadium. Now the Big 12 wants to do that with the conference. Like, I honestly would be okay if they were keeping the big part in there, right? Like if it was going to be the Progressive Insurance Big 12 Conference. Okay, it sounds campy. Sounds like you're just trying to go for a money grab, which they are. But at the same time, it doesn't sound terrible. But what are you thinking by going, you know what, let's drop big altogether and just put the company's name there. So it's going to be the Progressive 12 Conference, the State Farm 12 Conference, the you need a structured settlement, you need cash now, or whatever it is. I mean, it's ridiculous. Looks like we're going to have opportunities for on-the-field corporate sponsoring as well, which is kind of really honestly and truthfully nothing new. But we're talking about actual like logos being painted on the field. Like before, if a first down line on a TV broadcast was brought to you by a certain company, they could, you know, because just in case you didn't know, that actual yellow line that moves on the TV with the team as they go down the field, that's actually not on the field. But it's, you know, they just digitally put it on there. So they can add a company logo as a sponsorship. We're talking about potentially putting logos on the field. So next time you go to Steve Spurrier Field at Ben Hill Griffin Stadium, you could very well see the big Gatorhead logo at midfield, the F's at each 25-yard line, and then on the other side of the F's from each 25-yard line, you got the SEC logo. Well, but then on the 15-yard line, right in the middle of the field, you got a Dunkin' Donut logo and a Sonny's Barbecue logo. I really hope that they don't go that far, but we are getting very close to that being a possibility. We are getting very close to teams having patches and stuff like that on their uniform. We already see it in the NFL, the practice uniforms and things like that. They already have company patches on their practice jerseys. It's only a matter of time before we start seeing stuff like that at the college level, right? Have you ever seen like at the Senior Bowl where like a guy will have like multiple patches or like stickers from multiple teams like on his helmet, right? Like if he's got a buddy, like, you know, there's some guys that like play in the SEC and like they'll have like one side of their helmet for the school they played on and then the other side, like if it's an Alabama helmet, like, you know, they wear number 5 for Alabama, they'll have that crimson helmet with the white 5 on one side, but then on the other side of that white stripe down the middle, they'll have a Florida Gator, the script Gators, they'll have a, you know, Mississippi State logo. They'll do that kind of stuff just to kind of show support for those schools. I fear we don't get to this point, but I have a gut feeling that we are in college football, that soon that's going to be like sponsorship stickers. That there's going to be a Jake from State Farm sticker on the back of your favorite college football team's helmet. Because in the introduction of the college football playoff, the NCAA is no longer about being different from professional sports. They are no longer worried about on-the-field product as much as they are how much money is being put in their pocket. If they're making a buttload of money off of something, they don't care if it drastically changes the game for a negative viewpoint, as long as they're getting money in their pocket. And now these conferences are starting to do the same thing as well. As long now that they have the ability, now that it's a thing where, you know, oh, we can sell the naming rights to our conference thanks to this new legislation that's going through right now. We can do all of that. They don't care whether it's going to hurt the game or hurt the conference or hurt a team for better or worse. They just see money signs. So hopefully somebody talks the Big 12 out of doing this. We'll see. I don't think the Big 10 and the SEC will go that far, because the Big 10 and the SEC, those carry weight, right? Those carry weight. The SEC and the Big Ten, when you're talking about college athletics in general, not just college football, but college athletics in general, that's heavy hitters, man. You're talking about Ohio State. You're talking about Alabama. You're talking about Penn State. You're talking about Florida. You're talking about Georgia. You're talking about Michigan. Those are heavy hitters in college athletics. I don't see Big Ten and SEC planning on doing this anytime soon, and I really hope the Big 12 seriously considers and rechanges their mind. And doesn't follow through with this, but we will see. We will see. As we head out on today's program, just want to give a quick congratulations, Bryson DeChambeau winning the U.S. Open from Pinehurst over the weekend. Roy McIlroy, you've got to feel bad for him. You know, tied right there, has an opportunity to win it, and just collapses down the stretch. Continuing that drought for him. It's been 10 years now since he's won a major championship. Had an opportunity this weekend and just lost it. You got to feel for him. That sucks for sure. Not a lot of fun. But again, want to say congratulations to Bryson DeChambeau, the guy that did win it. And no, he's definitely excited, and rightfully so. He should be. Definitely earned that yesterday. And that is actually going to do it for the show. So we are donezo for today. We'll see what happens tonight in Game 5. Of course, we'll talk about the results of Game 5 in the NBA Finals tomorrow. And then, of course, we'll look ahead to Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Finals tomorrow on the Glass Half Full and ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. Hey, you have a great Monday. I will talk to you tomorrow for Taco Tuesday.